start her off?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, I guess we'll get started here. I think that a couple people might be rolling in late. This area was more difficult to find parking. Just to introduce myself briefly, my name is Chris Wright, and I work for Google, and I've been working on the Wi-Fi network that we set up in Mountain View. So most of my days are spent down in Mountain View, and then I come up here, and I can been kind of putting on a couple of these information sessions to just talk about the network and kind of set expectations of what the plan's going to be. We also have with us Steven Salinger here, and he's from Earthlink. So you have a member of Google and a member of Earthlink present. We have just about 12 slides here, and I'll go through them kind of briefly. If you have a question, I think it's fine to just throw a hand in the air. There aren't too many folks here tonight. But otherwise, we're definitely not going anywhere at the end. So if you have a burning question, you can wait till the end, and I'll just hang out, and Stephen will be here as well if you have any other questions. So to get started, the reason why we're here today is, first and foremost, it's to tell you about the proposal. So there is a proposal right now that Earthlink and Google are working on as a joint effort for the city of San Francisco. We want to hear ideas and feedback, and then basically just update you where we are in the process. Because it's been a little bit of a lengthy process, there's more work to go. Just want to answer any questions that you may have about the network regarding what you've heard so far or what you haven't heard. So our first paragraph here. This network, the idea behind it is that you can easily access a free, low-cost outdoor network from your laptop, PDA, any Wi-Fi-enabled device. We're using Wi-Fi as the protocol here because that's the most devices use Wi-Fi. And we want this to be accessible to the maximum number of people. So there's a couple of different levels of service. There's going to be a free level of service, and that's going to be at 300 kilobits per second, and then there'll be a paid level of service if somebody wants to pay money, then you're going to need a faster service, and that's at 1 meg up and down. So that's a little bit more than three times as fast. So there are a couple of different options regarding what you want to participate or how you want to use the network. Sir?
So up and down?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Okay.
So 1 megabit.
Correct. 1 megabit up, 1 down, 300 kilobits up, 300 down. Just kind of for comparison, that both of those speeds are faster than dial-up, if any of you use a dial-up internet connection. Probably not as fast as broadband. Some of your broadband connections will go over 1 meg. It's comparable to DSL. Some of the DSL connections I've used come in maybe around 700, 600 kilobits per second. So just to give you an idea. The way that you're going to get a stronger signal inside your home, I think this is probably the most common question that we get in Mountain View. It's, you have a free network, you have nodes up, they're broadcasting a signal, and we'll show you a picture of what our nodes look like. In order to receive that signal inside your home, you'll probably need another piece of equipment. And that's what we call a Wi-Fi modem. And this is just one example of that type of device. So my laptop computer, you can't really see the antenna on it. It's Wi-Fi enabled, which means it will receive a Wi-Fi signal. The antennas inside laptops are around 30 to 40 milliwatt antennas, which is kind of a weak capability compared to what this device would be. This is 200 milliwatts. So we have this device in Mountain View that people use. It's made by Buffalo. There's one that's made by Peplink, and another company called Ruckus, which is based out of Sunnyvale. So there's a couple of different players now that are coming up with these devices. And because the signal is so much stronger outdoors, you would just place this in a windowsill. So you can put this in your windowsill, the Wi-Fi network's out there, it intercepts the signal, and then there's an Ethernet jack in the back. So if you have an old desktop computer from 1996, or you're not even sure if your computer's Wi-Fi enabled or not, you could just run an Ethernet cable right out the back and then go into your computer. So maybe your computer's downstairs or upstairs. Any questions on this? This is kind of a different idea than what you see with a lot of internet. Okay. So next, I have some fabulous pictures from Mountain View. So the way that the network works is that each radio is going to communicate and mesh with other radios. So we have mounting assets provided by the city, namely their light poles. So we get a contract with the city of San Francisco to hang these radios on. It kind of looks like a shoebox, and then you have a couple of antennas coming out of the top of it. So we're going to hang multiple radios, not sure of the exact number, but roughly 30 to 35 per square mile. Could be more and it could be less, but that's just kind of a general idea. I think in Mountain View we have some areas where it's as low as 20 and some where there's as many as 40. So it depends a lot on the topography and just the density of traffic. So these radios all are connecting to each other, and they don't need the internet run into them. All they need is a power supply. So if we look at this radio on top of the light post, we just plug it in on top, and it just needs electricity, and it immediately becomes a part of the mesh network. So they're all emitting a signal just in a radius around them. So it's kind of like an omnidirectional signal. And then eventually it gets back to a directional antenna. And we have a picture of those as well. So this is a picture of the directional antenna that we use in Mountain View. It's by a company called Ovarion. We'll be using a Tropos directional antenna in the San Francisco network, but they pretty much accomplish the same thing. You can see that they're not too big. Looks like a diamond on top. And the point is, maybe you have 5 or 7, there's a community of these nodes, and they're all talking to one another, and they're trying to get your signal from your laptop computer back to a base station where the internet actually exists. And so this is communicating to a base station, and there'll be multiple base stations. Any questions on that? In our network in Mountain View, we have cluster sizes right around 5 or 6 or 7 of these nodes. For San Francisco, we want even more of these directional antennas because we're anticipating a lot heavier use. So maybe 3 nodes would then go to one of those gateways. Yes, sir?
How are you going to transmit
this? 1. So what's the power? These transmit at 1 watt, and that's a maximum that's governed by the FCC.
So we have mountains,
mm-hmm.
and the mountains
The answer is yes. I mean, a hill will affect the signal, and so that's why we'll be deploying more of these nodes. If you visit Tropos' website and look at how many nodes they think are required, they've done some where they'll put maybe 15 or 12 nodes in a square mile. But that's where there's no hills, there's not a lot of buildings. That's just seeing how far that signal can be broadcast. So in the city, we're anticipating it to be much greater in the 30s and 35. Yes, exactly. So we're going to try and get a contract with the city, and then also working with PG&E to gain access to their poles. But poles are the easiest way to hang these up, and so those are pretty much the 2 places. In Mountain View, I even talked to Caltrain, and we're trying to hang nodes on there. And we even use privately owned mounting assets, too. So Castro Street has some really big buildings, and it made sense for us to strategically put like one of our base stations there, and so then we're able to rent out that space, and that's what Google's done. Yes?
You said the power output is small enough, 1 watt, mm-hmm. and that's regulated by the FCC. Mm-hmm. What about the directional?
Do you know what the directional is? I want to say that it's less, but I'm not sure. And I can find out for you. I'll just take down your email address afterward. The reason why I don't know exactly what this is because it's varied. So we had one link that was trying to go like 1.2 kilometers, and then that they didn't have the signal as strong enough for another one that wasn't as strong. So I can find out some specs from you.
Logically, it'd be more for the directional. I mean, it's going to go all the way back to the base station.
Well, our base stations, the way that we set it up in Mountain View is the base station is actually pretty close. So the furthest away that this would ever be would be, I don't know, maybe 1 mile or a lot closer than 1 mile. It's not too far. So we thought it was less, but I can find out some exact numbers for it.
How does that translate on the street, like every 100 feet or so?
Not really every 100 feet. So if you think of 35 of these per square mile, and then maybe one of these for every 3 or 4, you're looking at maybe 10 to a dozen of these. I don't think you'd see one every 100 feet, but in some areas where it's just more dense or there's more topography to work around, maybe you would. No, not really. The fog really wouldn't, just because it's a radio wave. So the fog just doesn't make a difference. If we were dealing more with like fiber optics or trying to send an optical signal, then yes, that would play a factor. Otherwise, the weather really doesn't affect the way the radio waves move. Other than when it's the winter and there's no leaves on the trees, then the signal can move easier through the trees. But there aren't as many trees here in Mountain View, so. Yes?
Creating interference with like electronics.
Electronics at home, so that's a really good question. The answer is no, we haven't seen much interference with your home electronics. So this is 2.4 gigahertz, and that's the same level of the spectrum as a garage door opener or a baby monitor, so that's right where that lies. The other thing is that the signal dissipates very quickly as you move away from here. So people using their home networks, if you buy your home wireless router and you're using it inside your apartment, I've heard of 1 or 2 people that have said, you know what, the channel that this is on is conflicting with this, and then they're able to just specify a different channel. So 2 of those instances in Mountain View so far from when we launched in August. So we really don't anticipate that being much of a problem just because your home wireless router is so much stronger than what this would be, unless it's right outside your window. That's really the only time that it would really compete for that things. So we put this slide up here. The question so far, you guys have been pretty savvy. This is just an idea to show you what the internet can do for you as a user. So our first example says, a man in Chinatown Park uses the internet to call his mom. That's some kind of a new technology that you don't really think of with the internet is voice over IP. And so if you have a free network, you could potentially use a voice over IP phone to make long distance or international calls free of charge. And so that's kind of an interesting idea that we're hoping to really promote more. I don't have my phone with me tonight, but these companies like Sony and Skype and a couple of the others out there send us some of their prototypes to play with to see how they work. And we're hoping that that'll really become kind of useful for people that don't want to pay long distance charges. The connection that you need in order to get a strong voice over IP connection is, well, if you go to Skype.com, they claim it'll work really well on dial-up. And I've tried it on dial-up, and it's a little bit choppy. I mean, you're like, hello, hello, and there's kind of, you know, it's not really smooth. So we're thinking the 300 works pretty well. I set up a test network at 200, and I was able to carry on a conversation fine. So that's one example. The next one down, we have downloading music in Golden Gate Park. The third one, a woman uses her PDA to check the muni schedule while sitting outside a cafe in the Mission. And then lastly, a family in the Sunset pays their utility bill online. So kind of the point is using the internet ubiquitously from anywhere in the city, having that ubiquitous experience of leaving your apartment, being connected, going anywhere, and having the internet there for you to use.
On that map,
mm-hmm.
how much of that area are you planning to cover with these dinners?
The answer would be all of it. We're willing to cover all of San Francisco as defined by San Francisco. So, for example, we have Golden Gate Park here. If the city says, you know, we don't want the internet in parts of our parks, then okay, fine, we don't have to put it there. That's pretty easy to do. So it could be that you just don't really want the internet in a park or in this area or that. But otherwise, we're committed to launch this throughout the entire city, like including Treasure Island, anywhere with a San Francisco zip code. This is an interesting example of the landing page that we've used in Mountain View. And the reason why we bring this up is just to show how we've localized an internet experience down in Mountain View. So this is a page, it's called Personalized Start Page. Google launched this a little over a year ago. And what we've done in Mountain View is we show the user a Mountain View map where they can search for things like restaurants or pizza. And the search query is already in the Mountain View area, so they're able to see different buttons here of locations where they can go and find, you know, Wells Fargo, or the closest Walgreens, or even emergency services. Now, the modules that surround this map are each created by a different organization. So we have one here by the Mountain View Voice, which is the newspaper. So they create a blog, and then the latest news stories are just automatically updated. The reason this page is kind of interesting is that it's unique to every user. So if one of you went to Mountain View right now and logged onto the network, you could decide, you know, I do not like the Mountain View Voice. I think that its stories are horrible. I just want CNN.com. And that's fine. You could delete that. You could add another module for CNN.com. So this module is completely customizable to the user. And we're hoping to kind of get the community involved that way. So far, the internet's been the type of experience where you log in and you don't really know where you are. You're not talking to your neighbors. You don't really see neighborhood stores. You might see Amazon.com and some big national brands. But we're hoping to kind of localize that. Maybe you create a chalkboard that's just for your neighborhood in the Mission District of a little block, and anybody that lives there can write to it and post to it. And then different users could subscribe. Again, though, this is just a landing page. If you don't like it, then you don't have to use it, and you can visit any other website. So this would be on the free connection, the 300 kilobit up and down connection that Google's providing. So that's just one example. We have here that our network will reach every neighborhood, and we would like it to reach every San Francisco. So on the left-hand side, extensive training and support. We're starting to hold these information sessions right now, and we're going to continue to educate the community as the network rolls out. So down in Mountain View, one thing we've done is grab groups of high school students, groups of Stanford students, taught them about the internet, taught them about the network, and then we've deployed them. And some of them have gone to senior centers or to PTA meetings, just trying to educate people that have never been online before or don't really know anything about the internet, how to use it. So we're really trying to introduce folks to the internet that haven't seen it before. The second point, in partnering with local vendors, one thing that I did kind of through June and July was find mom and pop stores down in Mountain View and said, hey, this is what we're doing. We need some people to supply these devices. Because these devices, you can't really get this at Best Buy or Fry's right now. They're just not really in high demand. And that will probably change once you have a network in San Francisco that requires them. But this is new technology, and it's emerging technology. And so it's been fun to involve the community that way and then say, hey, here's some local vendors. Don't go to Best Buy. You can call this guy. He'll come. He'll install the device for you and provide a good user experience. So we're hoping to involve the city as much as possible.
What's their request?
So there are a couple different price points on this. The different brands range from $99 to $180 to $400. We also have one that's as low as $30 right now. And it looks kind of like a baby monitor, so it doesn't really look like this. So those $30 ones, we're hoping that they go down to $19.95. And when I started, they were $80, and then we've kind of watched the price drop. The other thing is if you want to pay for the level of service with Earthlink, which would be about $20 a month, so that's about half of what I pay for Comcast, then you're just given this for free. So it's kind of subsidized, you can use it for free, and then that's all through Earthlink. Yes?
What you're saying is you can choose not to pay for the premium service, and it could be the inside of you just want them to see what's going to be in there.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So it could be that you just use the free network, and maybe you sit by a front window, and it might work through one window. In many places in Mountain View, it will. So a lot of our users just sit on their couch. It works perfectly fine. But you walk into the bedroom, and then the signal kind of dissipates because you're going through so many barriers. So if you want a better experience, you could buy this on your own and just pay $100. Now you have it. You're not charged month by month by month. Or if $100 is steep, you could go to the $20 per month plan, and that's through Earthlink, and then you'd just be given this. So there are a couple different ways. I'll just speak for a moment on the other device, which I think is really interesting. If you just imagine an apartment complex with maybe 30 different units, and every person gets one of the $30 ones, what they do, it's a company that, it's a couple of guys from MIT that created it, and I apologize, I don't have the example, but in Mountain View, we've been giving them away to some low-income housing places, just as an experiment. So the first one received the signal, and it also passes it on to the next one. And then you're creating your own mesh network inside an apartment complex, even though you may be 6 or 12 barriers deep, so lots of walls. So we're trying to work on some affordable solutions that way just so that everyone can get access. And those are the same idea. It receives the signal. There's also an Ethernet jack in the back, so you can plug an Ethernet cord into it.
So the more the merrier.
Exactly, yeah, the more the merrier. And so those are some projects we're working with in Mountain View. We have a couple of mobile home parks, a couple of different places, and so we're really experimenting with that technology. Meraki, the company, is based out of Mountain View right now as well.
So you don't have any sense of trying to signal?
It's tough to say because it depends a lot. Well, the thing that it depends on the most is your laptop. Every one of these laptops puts in a different antenna. And from what I've seen, Macs are much worse than PCs. But that experience really varies. And so it's just going to depend on, one, where the node is and just how much is in between it. So it's tough to really predict. It's really tough to predict. Okay. So on this slide, we have, Stephen.
I almost forgot.
On the right-hand side, we like to point out that Google is available in so many languages. One thing that Google did when we came to San Francisco is started experimenting with who is speaking what language. And when we go to these presentations, is English going to be the preferred language? And one thing that I found out was, I think it's Tagalog, is spoken by 10% of the San Francisco community. And I had absolutely no idea of that. But Google, as it says up here, speaks 109 languages and counting. So we're really trying to create a localized experience through this. On the next slide, we do have a slide up for businesses. So on the left-hand side, it says free and affordable access, good for business, good for customers. What we're doing in Mountain View right now is trying to get the internet in as many waiting rooms as possible. So you go to the dentist, there's Wi-Fi in that waiting room. You go to the mechanic, you don't really have to wander around. You could sit with a laptop or a Wi-Fi-enabled device. I think that this really shows a lot of opportunity for a business. If you think of the public library, for instance, they could create one of those modules, drop down their latest books or their latest DVDs, and then people be able to see that easily from any location. So we're hoping that this Wi-Fi is really going to give businesses an opportunity to reach customers in new ways that they haven't before. On the right-hand side, this is just a map showing a radius. It's kind of a bizarre picture, but a radius around a single location. So in Mountain View right now, we're finding a business with a single location, and we're trying to create a promo that would be maybe half a mile around them. So it's a very, very targeted radius of where people might be able to find them and learn about their business. So there are a lot of different new technologies that we're working with, and pretty excited to come to San Francisco because there are so many more businesses. We can create a really interesting inventory for people just to find new restaurants, to find new services in their area. So we've been talking about these two levels of service, and this is the slide that outlines it. On the left-hand side, we have the free network, which is 300 kilobits per second, and that's up and down. So the cost is free, and you would need a Google account. So if any of you use Gmail, that is a Google account. Otherwise, it's free to make one. You just have to have an email address. But you do have to log in. A lot of people ask, why do I even have to log in? Why isn't it just there on my computer? And that's just to ensure that you're a human being, that there's an actual person there trying to use the service, and that there aren't people could set up bots that are continually doing evil, bad things. So it just ensures that you're an actual person. On the right-hand side, you have an option with Earthlink. And this is approximately $20 per month, and that's where you'd get one of these for free, subsidized. And then you'd be able to access the internet throughout your home. You'd also be able to, of course, access it from anywhere else around the town as well. So I like to use Comcast as a good example right now. I really like my Comcast service. It's very reliable for my apartment, but it's not reliable as soon as I'm about 50 feet away from my apartment. Then I have zero connectivity. So that's what's kind of interesting to this. It's just giving more options to the city. It's providing a free option. There is an option that you could pay for. But we're really not out to replace any internet providers. We're just out to provide more choice.
Sorry.
Yes?
Which of these two did you say was comparable to the DSL speed?
1 meg up and down is comparable to my DSL, DSL speed. So some DSL providers say, yeah, I'm 1.2, I'm 1.5, and then you run a speed test and it comes out 780 or 650. So we think that the 1 meg up and down, that's going to be comparable to DSL.
But slower than broadband.
Slower than broadband.
Is the affordable faster than the 3.1 is less than a third of the speed.
Yeah, the 3.1, yeah, exactly. This would be about one third the speed. It's still much faster than a dial-up connection, but it's not going to be as fast as broadband or DSL.
What's
all
the latency?
Well, I guess I'd say the speed is kind of comparable to latency. I mean, right, you type in a website and you want to see the website right away. So, I don't know, I'd say that these speeds are kind of quantifying what that latency would be. I don't know if that helps. Mm-hmm. Can you define what you mean by latency?
You need to back down when you get back to 20-30
seconds.
So, would
be figuring
out how to do it. Oh, okay. It's loads, not just with speed, but with all the different elements in this latency to bring in.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, and so we'd imagine that this network, any Wi-Fi network, could perform much, much faster than 1 megabit per second. So in terms of, I mean, in Mountain View, we've got it up to 9 or to 10, where you're standing right underneath, and it's just instantaneously traveling. So we're actually putting the cap on 300 or 1 meg, and so it can't go faster because we're actually setting it. So there really would not be a noticeable latency, because we would be actually placing some governing, you know, agent on here, so you're not going faster than 300, so you would really never feel the latency of the network in terms of the actual speed that it's traveling from node to node, because it would be much above 1 meg, if that makes sense. And would you like to add anything to that, Stephen? I don't know if
I've been concerned this hard about technology.
So Stephen says he can't talk about the technology. The latency, though, of a signal traveling from a node to an access point to our phone and then back again is going to be much faster than this number, than 1 meg. I mean, by a factor of 4 to 10. So that means you wouldn't really feel the latency because we're already capping your speed at 1 meg or at 300. So this just gives you an idea of where we've come from in terms of the proposal. So this proposal started August of 2005. The city began to gather interest. They said, hey, send us information about your process. And they released this RFI. The RFI, where's that, in December of 2005? Oh, no, that's August. That was the RFI. So about 27 companies said, here's information. They brought it to the city. Then they released their RFP, and the RFP was in December. About 7 companies responded to that, one of which was Earthlink, who then partnered with Google. So the city looked at these 7 different proposals, and they selected the Google Earthlink proposal. So in April of 06, that's when we got selected. Then in June, the city started negotiating terms with Earthlink, and they're in that negotiation process right now. So what happens is Earthlink's going to negotiate a contract that they believe the city would agree to. They're going to present it to the Board of Supervisors. We're hoping that takes place late December, maybe early January. The Board of Supervisors would then have to approve that contract before we actually start building the network. A couple of things to note, Google has the contract with Earthlink. Earthlink has a contract with the city. So Google doesn't have a contract with the city. Basically what Google's doing is buying a portion of the network and then giving it away for free. So Earthlink will be building the network, Earthlink will be deploying all of the nodes and overseeing everything. Google's actually purchasing that amount of bandwidth and then in turn just giving it away free to San Francisco. So that's kind of the way the relationships fall.
And when you say the city put out the RFPs, or RFPs, who decides to do some? Is there any particular groups in the city?
That actually responded with a proposal?
With whom are we negotiating or interacting with the city?
Yeah.
DTIS?
And that's
Department of Telecommunications and Information Services, which is a city department.
So there is actually a department of a group of people that said, okay, we want Wi-Fi. And I think that came from a lot of other areas. They said, you know what, just give us information. And so the information the 27 companies replied to, they reviewed the information and thought, hey, this would be great. It'd be great if the city had this. Send us your proposals. And then 7 companies responded with an actual proposal. Our proposal was this one, which includes free service and then a paid level of service. So I think it was, yes, sir.
So you would not be the person to ask, DTIS would be the person to ask, as to whether there's any intention of making services like the library and the hospital, the medical schools and the various citywide things available on this network.
And on the internet.
No, but they're on the internet, but they're not in any particular place.
It's true.
What I meant was a virtual city. As it used to be done when the internet started and sort of fell by the roadside.
And that's a city decision.
I can tell you this, in our negotiations with the city, we've committed to providing them on the portal landing page 6 links. The city chooses what they are. It could be school system, the healthcare system, and the transportation, each of them, the city government, and or the supervisor.
Have they mentioned anything to you about building out that portal as a virtual San Francisco?
I honestly don't know. I don't know, but from those 6 links, they can then again link to, and these 6 links and this information would be obviously free to everyone. But within there, you can have a landing page to go further into city resources and
so we have to
services.
And are you referring, sir, to just where they're hosting their information or what they use as their ISP? Like if I go to X public school a block from here, who are they using as their internet service provider?
Yeah.
Is that kind of what your question is?
Well, they're both options. You're probably too young to remember a lot of these things. You probably weren't even born yet. But there were ideas back in like 96.
I was alive in 96.
In 86, about,
yeah.
There was a national free internet network. And one way it would work would be that like the hospitals, the schools, businesses, libraries, and various people would pony up to create a virtual citywide city. If you give me your address, I'll give you a copy of the Google Doc.
Okay, I'll definitely take you up on it. What I can say, we've had a couple of members of a group called Tech Connect here in the past, and they're not here right now, but they have a lot of ideas about how to use that. I can also tell you in Mountain View, we're meeting with different emergency service providers, ambulances, police, wagons, and just talking about what antenna they might need or how they can receive that signal. So that, like right now, they were trying to estimate how much of a policeman's time is spent driving back, logging onto a computer, submitting forms and typing, if that could be done from the vehicle itself. And then you take that idea and you think of an ambulance being able to quickly, through an internet, say, hey, here's my victim. We are approximately 5 blocks out. Please be ready for us. So there are a couple of different applications that way. I can't speak to exactly.
Well, all the forms for a city.
Sure.
Fill out. If they were on home.
It's certainly possible. And what we're presenting here is just the infrastructure so that would be possible. That's a very fair point.
So the DTIS was formed by the city and county supervisors?
I'm not sure if it's an elected position or not. Do you know, Stephen?
No, it's an administrative function of the city. They have the city CIO runs it, so it's a group of city employees who work with these guys.
So
Chris Vane is the head of DTIS.
Were they responsible for setting the technical criteria for the RFP?
Exactly. They drafted the RFP, they issued the RFP on behalf of the city and the county.
And then presumably it's going to be a different group who will be doing the commercial negotiations.
Well, that's the group who are doing the negotiations.
Yes, sir.
And the city attorney is also brought into the group. Why am I saying it now?
Yeah.
There's a website, sfgov.org/TechConnect. And that has, what I was showing you earlier, because of the sunshine disclosure rules here in San Francisco, every meeting that we've had since the beginning of negotiations last June, minutes, exchanged emails back and forth, term sheets, they asked us for policy secrets and privacy. You know, we exchanged the city privacy, it's all up on the website every week or every other week. It started every other week, now it's accelerated, it's every week. And they have a matrix of every item we negotiate with the city. It's on the website and the status of our negotiations. There's 59 different items on the matrix. You can go in there and see, you know, if they ask us, well, what's Earthman's privacy policy? What is Google's privacy policy? We submit it to them and they post it on the website.
See, beyond the transparency involved with the documents of the meetings, are any of these meetings open to the public? Will the DTIS be open to the media?
The negotiations?
Not the negotiations regarding the cost of revenue sharing. Negotiations about the Google policy.
Yeah, ultimately the contract we negotiate with the city is then submitted to the Board of Supervisors for their approval. Because ultimately the decision rests with them to approve or disapprove. No. Of course, that would be public. Of course. We estimate between 12 and 18 months. There's a proof of concept. The city has asked us for it. We can figure out that just from our proof of concept. Acceptance, we define the success criteria. It's, you know, let's say we have to meet these criteria in order for to proceed. And once we meet those criteria, we estimate for 12 months to build up the entire city.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
So I'm going to ask a question. This is the internet, and then there's another level that we can pay for. Now, what's my services?
The paid service is just faster. That's really how I think of it. So you can still access everything at the slower level, and then if you want a faster connection, then you would pay.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Could you get streaming video at the slower level?
You can get some. What I've done at a connection of 300 kilobits per second is I'll let the video get ahead of me a little bit so I don't start watching it immediately. So if you click on like YouTube or something, you can watch the little thing go. So sometimes you do have to give it a head start, right?
I guess you have a problem.
What's, yeah, exactly.
You always got to wait. 300 kilobytes have been waiting for quite a while.
We set up basically a fake 300 kilobit network, and I was surprised at how well it did. Now, video, it's going to struggle the most with video. I mean, obviously, that takes the most bandwidth and the most throughput in order to make that happen.
that's a lot of
anything. That's what I'm saying, but you don't just secure it.
No, I'm sure it's security.
As I'm sure the gentleman from North Carolina is going to put a certain amount of resources into combat with things like spying.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going onto a totally open and secure network from the sign in. So anybody could, you know, hack in theory.
Potentially, if you as a user choose to go onto the network without taking security precautions, then that would be the case. What I would say is there's a free security solution from Google's side as well as Earthlink's side. And that creates what's called a virtual private network or a VPN network. So we have a free one for Google, and you would just put it on your computer one time, and then your connection is always encrypted. So your traffic would always be encrypted, and that encrypts your traffic from here up until the node. Once the traffic hits the nodes and it's traveling in between them, it's automatically encrypted. You have a secure
connection. So it's a free VPN?
Yes, correct. And that'll be from, well, with Earthlink's solution, you are paying up front, but you'll be receiving that VPN at no extra cost. And Google will provide that too.
But the critical point here is education.
Mm-hmm.
Once you download the client and the encryption technology and the tools, as long as you access the networks with that tool, you're safe. Sometimes people don't. And they're subject to, you know, people viewing the traffic.
No,
I strongly encourage to log on. Mm-hmm. Using the password, using that tool every single time. Once you download it once, it's always there as long as you log in through Earthlink or you log in through Google. But you know, you have to download it and use that application.
Presumably, if one of the things that you're going to be able to more features for things like spam protection and
all that. Exactly, spyware blockers, pop-up blockers, suite of protection services.
On Google's side, we don't really associate many of our tools with Wi-Fi. So if you're familiar with the Google toolbar, that has a pop-up blocker. Our email, what we've done in Mountain View is we've blocked outgoing port, like SMT port number 25. That handles some spam, but ultimately I'd say the best spam protection that Google has is at the Gmail level, which is our free email service. So there's not really going to be anything on top of that that we're going to be offering to people.
Well, I mean, the other thing is, of course, is the spyware, on the public network.
See, the spyware stuff and all the viruses, you're going to want a third-party vendor, like Norton Antivirus or McAfee. I mean, yes, Google has partnered with Norton, and you can download that. I think it's like a free six-month trial. I don't know if Earthlink, you guys use McAfee, is that right? Or I can't remember if there's an antivirus, anti-spyware solution.
It's Earthlink branded today.
Is Earthlink branded today? So Google does have a partnership with Norton Antivirus for some 6 months.
Yeah, but these classic colleagues work server.
Yes,
so any traffic coming in or sending an email, Google is going to scan that and then potentially strip out anything that's nasty that people can find.
Right, but that's when you're paying $20 a month for the additional service. So
that's what I'm saying.
And if you're using Earthlink as your email provider as well.
Yeah.
So we're not providing Earthlink email accounts with the free
one.
Yeah.
Which will do a couple of things with Gmail.
Correct.
Protect me from...
That is correct. Yeah.
The antennas themselves, are they malleable? Are they just like at a standard output, standard voltage, that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, it's 2.4 gigahertz transmitting out at 1 watt.
But
so, go ahead.
Is there any kind of idea that they could be changed for an emergency situation like this?
I mean, could? Yes. Yes, they could. I'm not sure what would govern us to change it, but it's certainly possible. So right now it's at 802.11b or g. That's kind of the standard protocol. If something else came along, maybe it's 802.11x. That's one. 802.11n. I mean, we can put anything through those nodes that we want to put through them. So it is easy to change that. Let's see inside.
I think, if I interpret your question correctly, because this has come up in our negotiations with the city, is it can priority access be provided to public safety networks in the case of emergencies?
Yeah,
such as an earthquake.
For a radio transmitter.
Yeah, in New Orleans. A Wi-Fi network like this proposed the same thing. The manufacturers deployed in New Orleans, and everything went down, obviously, in New Orleans during Katrina. And this is the first network. It was back up. And the city used it for emergency services. The same thing. We're in discussions with the city. And the question becomes defining the protocols, the escalation, and improvements. At what point does the city take over the network? We can prioritize police traffic, fire traffic, FEMA. There's a third bomb goes off in the city. You know, there's certain procedures that can be met. We can prioritize the traffic for public safety agencies.
So I think the answer is yes, it's certainly possible. Google and Earthlink would not be dictating when that would happen. I mean, that'd be at the city level. Basically, it would be the city's network to say, we want this, we want
that. It's a malleable.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Are you paying the city rent for bringing the antenna online?
Yes, we are. I mean, that's all part of the contract, is here is the rent that we would be required to pay for one pole.
And the installation, maintenance, all the costs are borne by?
By Earthlink.
By the city?
Yeah. Sure. That's a good question. Right now, no. So the answer is no, and we don't have plans of doing that. And that's actually the reason why Google gave all this money to Earthlink to just take this bandwidth and give it away for free, is to protect the user experience. Because we don't have plans of putting a big pop-up in front of you. People aren't going to be able to just purchase out sections of that landing page you saw. So you saw the landing page that we had, and I could put it up again. Ultimately, this landing page, though, can be changed by every single user. So a user could decide that they want this, don't want that, they do want this. I mean, if Blockbuster Video decided to create one of these modules, that's perfectly fine. We'll allow them to do that, but a user would have to choose to put that on their page. It's not going to automatically show up here. So I guess the answer would be, if a business created one of these modules, you could go and search for it and apply it to your page, but we won't be showing
advertisements.
Correct. Yeah, Google definitely values that user experience, and that's why we've partnered. That's really the reason why we're partnering with Earthlink.
That's now. Are you reserving the right to have that contingency?
To put a pop-up ad in front of you? No. We will never put a pop-up ad in front of you. I mean, that I can say that right now with 100% certainty. And that's just because Google has such a strong stance against pop-ups. We don't even allow AdWords advertisers to have them on their landing page. So if you have your own website, your own URL, and there's a pop-up when I visit it, you're not allowed to advertise with Google until you remove it. So we have a pretty strong stance against that. Sir?
Between McMally and Miller, this fellow, I remember being in this room when there was a gentleman who was proposing to the neighborhood that they put in something so that we could have better, people who have cell phones could have better reception. You would know better than me what that would be called. So,
Another amplifier or antenna could probably accomplish.
Yeah, and then, that voted down. But I was wondering, is there any way, say, that if they wanted to do this, they could use these antennas of yours?
They being a cell phone company?
Well, I don't know who they were. They were,
you can create
they were providers for, of bandwidth for people who have cell phones.
Sprint was a real good one.
Sprint was a
I mean, my answer would be...
So a private commercial company wants to use these antennas that are around the city, and their rationale is it's going to improve reception on your Blackberry, or Strawberry, whatever. Would they be available for those uses, or would that be a complete separate?
I think it'd be completely separate. Go ahead.
Is that a DTIS?
Earthlink's philosophy has always been to promote open access to, for years we've been fighting as an ISP to get access to phone companies, DSL lines, we could resell them. We've been fighting for years to get on the Comcast network. We've been unsuccessful. We did get on the Time Warner because when AOL took over Time Warner, the Justice Department said department. In order for the merger to, you have to allow a competitor on. So we weren't allowed on. We're now able to wholesale and sell Earthlink broadband services over Time Warner Cable. Consequently, this is the first network we're going to, Wi-Fi network we're going to build and operate. We want to wholesale access. We recognize as a network operator, Earthlink is an ISP. We only have a 7% market share. We're only going to sell the Wi-Fi service to our members. We're only going to get 7% market share. We want to sell this service to Comcast to AT&T so they can bundle this Wi-Fi high-speed service and resell it to their customer base.
Using the hardware.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. So they can offer, obviously, the 300.
I mean, I'd say that's
Google service
what we are.
Is free.
We are another company that's paying you money for use of the network
right.
and then giving it away.
We're basically wholesaling access to Google and they're giving it away for free. We're going to sell this. We'd love to sell it to AT&T so they can turn around and say, well, in addition to your local and long distance, you can also get this high-speed wireless access to the city for another, we say, $3 a month.
Gigahertz.
That they can sell to their customers.
We have more gigahertz. In other words, there'd be more
users.
Huh?
More users.
There wouldn't, the gigahertz wouldn't change. That's always going to be it. Was it 2.4?
Yeah.
So that wouldn't
change. That doesn't change.
But we're going to build the network. We want to fill it up, obviously. So we're going to give it to
So
we want to wholesale it to other people. They can turn around, bundle it with their services, resell it to their customers. As AT&T Wi-Fi, as Comcast Wi-Fi, as whoever, Sprint Wi-Fi.
But the amount of bandwidth necessary for Wi-Fi is different than for, say, a cell phone.
Requires
much more energy,
exactly.
And I'm saying, let's say somebody says, well, we've got these little puny Wi-Fi things, but this is our chance to amp them up so we can get better reception for more cell phones.
Yeah, and that would different frequencies. It's hard to find. It's a different network, different frequencies. It's totally different.
Yeah.
That's all I was
saying. Yeah, right. It's a different
you
service.
And they wouldn't put them on your poles.
Yeah, because one antenna is just operating at 2.4.
Because
they're city poles. Yeah, with the city poles. It's a different service. I mean, ultimately, I think what we're going to get in a few years is you're going to have a dual-mode phone with Wi-Fi, and a phone with cellular. Wi-Fi is going to be a lot cheaper to operate near your home. You're going to be able to talk basically for free. And in San Francisco, maybe they'll talk for free. But if you go to Oakland, your cell phone's not going to work. So you're going to have a dual-mode phone, one that works Wi-Fi throughout the city, and one that works cellular when you leave the city and go beyond this cloud
right.
around the city.
To summarize Stephen's point, they can wholesale out that Wi-Fi broadband space, but that doesn't transfer into a cell phone.
Right.
Yes, sir.
You're saying you select service. Are you capable of running in the higher ends of this moment? Is it capable of doing that?
Capable, yes. I don't think that the government allows us to. I believe the maximum spec on a Tropos node is 4 watts.
However, there will be higher speeds available once the network is deployed. So off the Alvarians, the Tropos nodes will be using over 1.5 guaranteed throughputs available for businesses. They were in discussions to see also providing a higher guaranteed bandwidth available to nonprofit organizations.
Well, I want to make sure, did I understand your question correctly? Are you talking about 1 watt? Is that right?
No, I'm just saying that you're offering 1 megabit up and down.
Right.
Oh,
is there
okay.
a time where you could offer 5 megabits?
Then I answered the wrong question. Okay, so you're answering the correct question.
Okay.
And that is 1.5. Yes.
So, and also, yes, our commitment to contract with the city is we're going to go out the door with these products. The technology's been evolving for 4 years. We're going to 211 and 802.11x. And whatever the next iteration is, with higher bandwidth, higher capacity, and those are products that will come out in the future, which will enable us to offer higher speeds through the network. But that's technological evolution, because if it takes a year, year and a half to build it out, we know that in a year and a half, the technology is going to evolve.
And the N is the next spec, which is yet to be verified.
Right.
Correct.
That's faster than up to 54, I think.
54 is cheap.
Also, it's not. It's nearly 100%.
Yeah.
In theory.
Exactly.
In theory. Yes.
So if you have more people using it, is it slower? I mean, everybody left.
The answer to that is yes. If you took one node and you had 3 people on it, and then you put 500 people on it, you would notice a difference. So what we'll do in those instances, we're able to regulate how many, well, not really regulate, but we see the traffic patterns. So we can look at a node and say, okay, this is at the maximum capacity, and then we just go in and either transfer it to a gateway or put another node in right next to it. And that's what we're doing in Mountain View right now, is just reading all the reports and saying, oh, we need another node here or here. So it's really easy to make changes.
Does that mean that you have certain guarantees actually in the contracts?
Yes, we do.
So what basically offers guarantees?
I don't know.
Terms, what would that mean?
I'm not sure what the exact guarantees are. And I think you're talking about where the signal is and what the speeds would be, that type of thing.
Like the chances of getting another one first time, average speed.
We could ask. I don't think that we've set any type of average speed. I think that what we've said is that we'll get that 300 level in every single part of San Francisco outdoors. So the main roads, and I'm not exactly sure. I can't really speak to what terms those contracts says, because it hasn't been drafted yet. That would be the honest answer. But you can certainly follow it on that website once the contract gets assigned. And we can ask Stephen that as well, because he might know more. Yes?
Chris, we've been talking so far predominantly about issues like how strong, how powerful, 100% coverage. One thing I don't hear too much in conversations like these is what kind of environmental impact are we talking about with wireless and other kinds of... I mean, it's an older question in a way, talking about FM and radiological microwave exposure. But this is a little bit different. We're not talking about people's prerogative to choose to talk on the phone. I personally, you know, sometimes don't. But this is covering the whole city, everybody in the city, children, old people, pregnant people, when you're sleeping, when you're awake, everyone, right? So, I mean, I noticed, I was delighted to see on the front page, are there any health risks related to this network? And you say no. And it's very simple, no, it's less than no. But what if you can elaborate on, maybe you could tell a skeptic like myself, maybe the one skeptic, exactly all the things that make you think that it's totally benign, and
is solar radiation safe? Especially, you know, this is the children's playground.
I think it's a great question. I mean, you see a node, and I think your first instinct when you look at it is that it's this big and it's got these huge antennas on it, and so that equates to lots of throughput. The signal strength that's coming out of that is the same as a baby monitor. So if you went to Walmart and you bought a baby monitor and you plugged it into the wall and you set it next to your child's head, that signal that's emitting from that going to wherever, you know, the parent is, that's the exact same. So those levels of frequencies, and that's next to a child's head as opposed to on top of a light pole.
That's not safe.
I don't know about baby monitors. What's another example?
A garage door opener.
So is that your
portable phone at home? The phone you have at home, you know, the handset. I don't. I want to know what level it is.
Those older portable phones.
It's 1/400th the power of a cell phone.
Right. Well, I don't have a portable phone. Epidemiological reasons.
But even a cordless phone is something that is periodic and short. I mean, it's not something that's constant all the time. Has there been any studies on a population enduring 100% coverage of, you know, what I think considerably could be said an elevated
the answer is yes. There have been studies done.
I can correct you. No. No, the studies have been significant, very legitimate concern. And serious studies have been done. I know they've been done in Norway, they've been done in Sweden, in Switzerland, because they've investigated these questions. And reports are all available. Unfortunately, as a resource, I don't have them, but I have the sites available. And we're going to put up an email, Wi-Fi for SF. Like that, yeah. Send me an email. I can direct you to these sites because
I read some of them. Some of them are pretty indicted of wireless communication. And you know, at some level, it starts to be a limitation, right, on communication. I mean, it's an elevated level or it's the length of time exposed. So you really have to have apples and apples. Well, it may not have happened where it's like constant exposure to a population like a broad city. Coverage like ours, where we have concentration
areas, where you seem like a real friendly, nice guy, and you're all into it.
I mean, I can tell you what I know, and the reports that Stephen and I looked at, we honestly sat down, we read these reports, and we read them from three different providers, and that's what it says. And then they throw up comparisons. A garage door opener, while not permanent, as you say, it's not continual, a baby monitor is, and you're not familiar with a baby monitor, some cell phones operate on this, or hand phones do.
A good thing anyone could look at is Lloyd Morgan from the National Cancer Registry. He's been monitoring the increase of brain tumors, and they've been going up exponentially.
And what's his theory? What's the correlation?
Cell phones. The newspaper said the other day that in sperm counts,
because of cell phones.
Yeah.
That could be. I haven't read those reports. All I know is that they do say that these are 1/400th that of a cell phone.
So. I did see a study showed that the incidence of testicular cancer in California out of control and with radar guns is up. There's mixed emotion about some people.
Yeah, the cops didn't want that.
I don't know if I remember reading the study, and it was, but that's much more powerful signal, because you know, he's sitting on the motorcycle going like this for 8 hours a day, and it's...
Well, Stephen, why don't we get some of those resources, and then we can just send out an email to anybody that contacts us.
You know what
we'll
do? We'll put up on our site, wififorsf.com. I'll put a link to the site with the studies that were done. And it's a very impressive list of 2030 studies. Sure. It's not just what we did.
But is the DTIS asking these questions? Well, I guess that's where what I was getting at. I'm sorry if I'm...
Oh, no.
I'm having too much time. It's not just me who does this.
No,
absolutely not.
No, not at all.
We would not be looking into these
intelligent
questions. No, we wouldn't be looking into the answers to the questions unless people were asking the questions.
So they are being asked. Part of the ongoing discussion with the city.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Stephen, but during that, the RFI, when they were just requesting information, I think that these health concerns were a huge part of that RFI.
Yep.
And so then that team sat down and they looked at all these different reports and tried to gather as much as possible.
So now that's the one that is no longer on the table.
Oh, it's still very much on the table.
Yeah. This is a community meeting. Here's my case. There are people who are convinced, I won't name names, that global warming is not a factor. That this is a cyclic thing, it's happened before, and this whole thing about global warming, while our scientists are looking into this, and our scientists have shown that there is really no concern for global warming. On the other side of the river, as you know, there are people who are very concerned about global warming. And so the question as to science as being a free, unbiased, objective source becomes a question. My own personal stake is that as an older gentleman with a compromised immune system, which is not contagious to anybody else in my neighborhood, I don't want my own life to be, you know. And for me, the question, there's two things that I'm just curious about all the time. One, since Europe, this is something we were talking about earlier in the cafe, since Europe has kind of accepted all this stuff, and Europe is very big on health, you know, one is of a certain awareness that they're health conscious. How many of these studies are European? The other question that I have personally, I don't think is answerable, is has there anything that's been done for 7 generations of study? Because mutations of tissue don't necessarily appear in the organism's lifetime. In terms of community discussion, these are like the question marks that are over the thought balloon in my head. I'm just asking.
And very legitimate questions. Mm-hmm. And I do not have the answer. Well, I will tell you, the study's not been done for 7 generations.
Yeah. Of the things we're going to go to, are any of them European?
Yeah, many of the studies were European. I will post or put a link to on the Wi-Fi.
But they weren't done by the European scientists who are working at the pay of the people that are trying to put the thing through. They were neutral.
I don't know.
I mean, this is the question.
The GE fund the study by Swiss.
There was one U.S.-based study done in 1996.
U.S.-based?
Guess who funded it? Ron Roberts.
It's like a little workforce.
It's not the countries.
How many of these studies were based on cell phones? Or was the cell phone factor, do you know?
I'm not sure.
Because, I mean, the fact is Europe has got a much higher population density, and when you're over there, there are cell phone towers everywhere.
What we can do is put
towers is probably Europe is the more high.
Absolutely.
And you've said, I mean, okay, let's ask another question. If
my little Wi-Fi network, like, what's the power on that?
Depending on the model, you're talking about just what it's actually spitting out. I don't know. Do you know what that would be? I want to say that it's over a watt, but I could be wrong. Okay. I'll have to look.
And the watt's not very much. And then, of course, the other thing that watts is the able to spread the watt. So as you double the distance away from the source, then the flat radiation flux goes down by a factor of four.
Exactly.
So if you're not starting with that much energy to begin with, then you're away from it.
And that's what our nodes are doing as well, is just dissipating so rapidly. Every foot that you get away, it just gets steadier.
Well, I'm just wondering, understand cell phones, cell phone town, it's a raw energy. This is what the NIMBY thing comes in. People want to put it in the narrow, but a lot of people quite like them, so they're not interested. Because they do pick up the energy.
So, which is worth that or second?
I think that it's, personally, I think it's difficult to compare cell phones to Wi-Fi, just because a cell phone tower, just like you stated, you put up one or two or even three, and they're very high energy. They're blasting out a signal, and that's why I can use my cell phone in my basement or in my bedroom or even blocked by all of these different walls. And then if you compare that to this technology, that's why we need hundreds and hundreds of nodes sporadically placed 600 feet apart, because they are so low power. So, to be honest, that's just kind of how I compare the two, and I think it's difficult to say that cell phone tower is comparable at all to our nodes. I mean, statistically, or the effect that it would have.
Well, are you saying this is the first that got the idea that they might be dangerous?
No, every community forum that we've been to, I mean, this issue's been raised, and it was definitely prominent in the RFI and the RFP. So it's ongoing, and I think it's very valid. This is not the first time we've heard
it. Well, there's been a lot of experiments on it.
I would think if anything's going
to be the scientists, independent from Sprint, independent from any of these corporation officials.
I'd encourage you to find more information. And we'll post everything we have on that link. And if you want, just write down our email address here and send us concerns. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and wrap up right now for those of you that want to leave. Please take as much food as you can hold with you. We always
get a lot of food. There's a homeless guy down the street. Well, we're actually giving it to the center, or for the children here, last night, for the homeless.
Yeah,
we did this.
But if you want any, take
but no, first do you have first choice. But yeah. If you don't take, we'll leave for the children here in the center.
We can't do that without a child.
Stay off free. Go read that in the Chronicle tomorrow.
But otherwise, I'm here, Steven's here. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to field them as well. Thank you. Oh, there's my thanks.